Welcome, everyone. Welcome to Freedom International live stream. Thank you for being with us. And as usual, we'd like to remind you that whatever resonates to you, if you like this episode and the others, please don't forget to thumbs up, subscribe, share it, because it's most important, okay? And do support all our guests and support us, like with Roy Colon of Awakening Podcast and Hartmut Schumacher of Go Your Own Path. And of course, yours truly, Grace Asagra of Quantum Nurse Podcast. So we welcome everyone, and we're hoping that in spite of everything that's happening around the world, we're all set to have another wonderful conversation. And yes, we are very excited today to have David Gosselin. I think I said it very nicely.
Gosselin.
Okay.
Like the actor almost, Ryan Gosling there.
Right. So, he was highly recommended to us by Math Erit, who's you've had been listening to before and followed. And so anyone who's in the camp of Matthew Erit and those in the truth and freedom camp, then we'd like to have them also with us. And David Gosselin is a poet, researcher, and translator in Montreal, Canada, and he is the founding editor of The Chained Muse. And his personal Substack is Aids of Muses. So go there, aidsofmuses.substack.com. And for the website, as I said, thechainedmuse.com, where he publishes historical deep dives, original poetry, and a variety of writings for a new renaissance. And he is an expert on Tavistock, social engineering, cultural warfare, and classical poetry and literature. So when he asked me what topic to that we want to focus on, of course, it's kind of hard to choose with everything that's happening, but we'd like to have this focus this discussion primarily on what's happening in Hollywood, what's been happening to us, all the movies that we watch, almost all the actors that we like seem to like, okay, when we get to know more, it's like, bang, bang, you keep decreasing your favorites. It's like, you don't know now, okay. Then others, the first thing they do is, okay, maybe they wouldn't watch anything anymore. But I'm not sure if that's really the best solution is not to watch, because maybe it's good for us to watch and keep an eye on what's going on. So David, thank you very much for being here. And I know you're a busy man, and I hope this wouldn't be the last time, but maybe an ongoing. Feel free to come anytime. We'll have you.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I look forward to chatting it up. I mean, we live in interesting times, right? You can't really get bored in our day and age.
Exactly. And that's why we always say, take care of our health, because if we want to continue this conversation, this fight, and this seemingly struggling things, but at the same time, we see a lot of good things happening, but the more that there are good things happening for the unipolar reality that we want, it's getting more challenging. So in this conversation, David, when David writes, my gosh, David, you write really extensive and deep and many pages. So if you are that kind of person, make sure you go to his Substack, and then he contributes also to Canadian Patriot. So go to those sources of literature. So I'd like to start with the paragraph that you started in your article, okay? And it says, It's one of life's great ironies that fiction often comes closer to truth than anything else. The latest wire, headline, or speech, notwithstanding, the greatest stories handed down to us over generations endure in ways that the typical Hollywood blockbuster or major news headlines rarely can. These stories do so because they capture something immutable and timeless about the nature of man, transcending both the time and space we inhabit, and yet they are perennial reminders of the revelations awaiting within us daily. So thank you for that one powerful beginning paragraph. So I want to add and respond to this paragraph. We just want statement. Sometimes when we learn about the truth is crazier than fiction. It's like it's even unbelievable that even we can't, it's hard for us to believe what's true because we've been like programmed for all those many, as you said, many decades, many generations. And so before you know it, we have a difficulty of knowing which one is real and which one is true or which one. So how about you begin us and describe to us what made you finally focus in this topic? Because it seems like for me, I go to movies now and then, and I don't know how fast can they make some movies because it seems the movies is like concurrent with what's going on already. Okay, then, and also I'm not sure for those people, well, I pay attention now that, you know, what are they trying to subliminally tell me? So go ahead and lead us to this conversation.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, definitely it's worth paying attention. It's funny the way, again, a truth fiction often comes closer to truth than the things we're hearing in the news. Like if you watch a lot of these, we can call them predictive programming, science fiction, sort of dystopian series on like Netflix, or I mean, it seems like this is all they're churning out is like this dystopian, someone's either a murderer, it's a psychopath that's like wants to like learn, take acting lessons at night and he kills people by day, or it's a hitman, it's a drug dealer, it's one thing or another, it's a cult. But there are messages there, but as well, I mean, first the reason for me taking interest in this is really, I mean, the same reason that Plato took interest in the poets and the role of the poets in the Republic. You know, he dedicates a lot of time. People think of Plato and like high philosophy. And of course there is that, but he dedicates an inordinate amount of time to something that what we think of as philosophy would probably not, which is the role of poetry and literature. And the reason he does so is because the poets were really the chief image makers in ancient Greece. You know, they didn't have Netflix and all the things that we have, Hollywood and 24/7 news. Not that that's really that different, if you think about it, once we explore what the poets were doing and, you know, this stuff was read in all sorts of different settings. These were the stories. These were the images that people were bombarded with, right? Were impressed with on the daily that shaped their own self-image, right? Because the poets would talk about the origin of the gods and the heroes that were, you know, part man, part god, and the whole history and lineages of all the heroes and, you know, how the modern cities that they lived in sort of stem from that history. And depending on how you told that story, it would sort of inform your own sense of identity, where you came from, right? Where we come from matters in terms of how we think about ourselves. It doesn't mean it's all determining, right? Sometimes because of where people come from, they think they don't deserve certain things, or they're, you know, there's something wrong with them because they maybe don't come from such, you know, illustrious origins. And then there's the flip side, the people who come from, let's say, very old or noble lineages. And at the end of the day, it's not very impressive, right? So all that to say, the poets were shaping people's cosmological, psycho-cosmological matrix, if you will, how they understood the universe, their relationship to nature, to the city, to the polis. So things aren't that different today. If you think about it, we have different myths-ish. There's modern myth making, and you could say it's more made up of information in a like kind of discrete and digitized version. People aren't writing dactylic hexameter to sort of communicate the message. Like a Homer would, you know, they're writing in punchy headlines. People read 30% of an article. They watch a couple movies. And I guess we can appreciate, I like to appreciate that a lot of our reality is shaped by this more than we would like to admit, probably, for most people, for sure. And so naturally, if we want to cultivate our awareness, we want to become better people, we want to have a better world, we have to know, you know, how the images, what we're being influenced by, right? And be able to consciously assess the validity of these ideas and these images, what underlies them. And that's what Plato was doing. That's what the Republic really was. You know, the parable of the cave, the shadows on the cave wall. What are the shadows really? You know, and it's the same question today. People see the shadows on the screens. What are the shadows really? That's, you know, that's where we're at. There's nothing new under the sun in that sense. But what changes is, what are we going to do about it? You know, how are we going to approach the question? Depending on who you ask, they'll give you different options. And as lovers of wisdom, we, loving wisdom means we have to assess these options and we have to choose what's good and what's not, what's useful and in helping us discern the higher reality casting the shadows and what obscures it. That's my rant.
Thank you, David. And isn't it interesting that sometimes when we hear that there's a lot of psyops, right, incorporated in all kinds of arts, in all forms of arts, sometimes it kind of really, for me, makes it sad that they're using it that way. Because just like you were saying, that I appreciate those times when we could do storytelling. So like when I have two little grandchildren, and I encourage that. I encourage that, and they say, we even go from one, we will say, okay, I'll start a story. And then we continue. And it's just like it triggering, encouraging their imagination to go off however they want to. But at the same time, I think it's important that we should be aware that, hey, we're doing this storytelling, but, you know, just always be, I think as parents, we have to be aware of bringing them to movies that to make sure that we notice those subtle messages. Because when you mention about the shadows, which one is stronger, like the way they do messaging? Is it those that are like in the background, or is it that one that's blatantly being spoken of or verbally? Because sometimes, I don't know, some people can just hear things, but they don't see little things outside the whole thing, you know?
So my answer is actually, it's what's not shown on the screen. It's not even what they're saying or the details. It's what they're not showing, right? Like, what are we saturated with right now? You know, one of the day after tomorrow, right? That's like, everybody know, have you guys all seen that one? The day after tomorrow, the ice age and humanity is pretty much screwed. You guys have all seen that one?
Yeah,
and that's just emblematic of, I mean, a whole genre, right, of like end times, end world stuff. And the question I would throw back at people is, can they imagine a beautiful world and a beautiful future where society doesn't collapse, civilization isn't destroyed, but we actually have a renaissance? It's actually reborn, and a lot of these cults, these artificial cults and art synthetic culture, popular culture that's sort of imposed on people. Can we imagine a world in where people see through that and we actually get back to making truly timeless art within our own unique times, right? And we get back in touch with the eternal mysteries, right? That is man, that is the soul, that is the fact that every human being is creative, right? The idea of being every man is in the image of God. We all have a sort of divine spark, right? We see it in children. I think that's for anybody who's like, whoa, what do you mean? Or like, just look at little children. You know, they're always asking why? You know, and you see, we go through the system, people get older, and they become much more entrenched in their habits and they stop asking why. That's not actually natural. So it doesn't mean that we don't have other responsibilities, but you're not, that magic and wonder isn't supposed to go away as we get older. In fact, I'd say the mysteries are supposed to just become clearer and more mysterious. They're just supposed to become more obvious that no matter what we do, little child is born, it has that same innate hunger and thirst to know and to understand and to express a unique self. Every individual is unique. So what does a society look like where we cultivate that? Go find that in your Hollywood movie. You know, that would be the challenge that I would throw to people. You're going to find, if we have that image in mind and we contrast it with what we're presented, then I think the truth starts to emerge, right? There's a new clarity in terms of what the problem is, what's missing, what's not said, and how do we, you know, have a conversation about that? How do we have art that gets to that?
At this point, David, would you say that most of the people who are in the business, in the Hollywood business, are they complicit to what they've been doing, or they're like aware, most of them? Because it's really hard to write that fathom that, you know, most of them do it. It's like, you know, don't people have any more like that idea, as you were saying, that like concept of divinity and, you know, in their soul, that they should at least do some movies that are, you know, that would lead us to the truth of who we are instead of like the all the crazy stuff?
Yeah, I mean, I have the tendency, yeah, to suspect that most of it is very not good, we'll say. You know, there are exceptions, right? There are interesting movies. And yeah, unfortunately, even the better ones, like there's, you know, I haven't seen it, but people I know, they've really liked Dune. Like there, when you have the revival of epics and epic storytelling, like that's always fun. And there's a lot of craftsmanship and artistry. But this is why I think Plato's useful. Number one, yeah, the bad guys need to control Hollywood because it's the image making. Like it's a big deal. You see one movie, and imagine if there was a movie that sort of talked about the things we're talking about, like just a great story, a beautiful epic story with a great storyline and all the bells and whistles that a very good Hollywood movie like a Dune or something will have, where, you know, you got original music, you got new languages, they're going all in. Imagine if you just had even one good movie telling like a truly good, exciting and uplifting story. You know, I tend to think that can significantly transform the culture. Just one good film that really sort of presents the real thing in its own original way. So that's definitely the power of it. And if we can appreciate that, then we can appreciate why it's kind of occupied by the forces that it is, because it is so important. At the same time, I would simply point out that like a lot of these big industries now, Hollywood, the movie industry, it's largely dead. Like Jerry Seinfeld, not that he's like this huge authority on that, but I was listening to a podcast and he was saying like the film stuff, it's these macro cultures are sort of collapsing, these big behemoths run by these, you know, nefarious things. And you have the emergence of micro cultures. You have the emergence of more independent films, more independent content creators. So I'm an optimist, and that's usually what I have to warn people about, because it can be a bit offsetting at first, because I don't really subscribe to like end times, doomsday. You know, the predictive programming hasn't worked, at least not fully, I guess, because I didn't get the message that I was probably supposed to. So yeah, it's exciting that we can make movies. I have a friend. We're working on our first film. It's going to be more like literature culture stuff. So like a documentary film. But there's no reason right now to not look forward to very exciting new cultures emerging and a much more diverse, right? A microculture. It's not five media companies and like three mega film companies controlling everything. Sure, people maybe don't have $100 million budget, but if people can put out good proofs of principle with good stories, I think we shouldn't be surprised that that's going to have a qualitative effect on the hearts and minds of people and inspire hope of what's possible down the road.
Excellent.
So, hi, David. I mean, people are kind of aware of, you know, Epstein's flight log and all the actors involved in that. And there's even people now on TikTok exposing a lot of the people. I mean, we've seen it for years, but people thought we should put on our tinfoil hats when we're kind of coming up with this, how evil these people are. And even like The Rock, Dwayne Johnson, you know, like he telling people how to vote like 4 years ago and then coming back now and saying, ooh, I made a mistake. Like, I mean, the fact that somebody like needs to be told by an actor or even a sports star or something like that and how to vote just shows, I mean, they should never have that power. They shouldn't be allowed to do that. You know, that it's just so wrong. But like with all of the craziness that's going on in Hollywood, and like I know you go deep into cults, like the reality is the whole lot is a cult. I mean, whether they come from Freemasons or it's a recruitment process by the evil cabal, whatever you call them, bringing them in, like that's how the whole system is run. And it's like us as the, you know, cinema goer is like, we can change that as well. Just like what happened with McDonald's recently. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that. Like, but you know, like people started bashing McDonald's. I know it's a terrible product. Nobody should be going there or buying it, but they got a bit kind of cocky in what they're doing. And people decided you're not allowed to do that. And they can do the exact same with the movies. When they realize that somebody has been evil, abusive, just unfollow them, not go to the movies by them, which in turn leads to people not making a movie with that actor or actors.
Well, I think that, yeah, I mean, just to say, because you talked about, yeah, like there's like a cult thing. And sure, I mean, there's nothing new under the sun in that sense, right? Like, I do believe that there's progress and things change, but that often just comes from taking the approach that we choose to take. Right? Like you can build a city in a beautiful way or you can build it in an ugly way. Right? But man's always going to be building cities. We're going to be building things. Same with the films. And I just like to think of, you know, think of the victories that throughout history people forget. How did Jesus take on the Roman Empire? How did Socrates, you know, this old annoying man, supposedly, who's just asking questions, you know, they had to put the guy to death because, you know, they made a martyr of him. They make martyrs of people. And we see that when people have this higher sense of identity, that yes, we have a body, you know, we have flesh and blood, but we're not just flesh and blood. And there is something higher. And that doesn't mean that the body's bad or, you know, we're not preaching some kind of weird Gnostic thing, which a lot of people get caught up in. Like a duality, right? Material versus immaterial. But there's a soul. We have a mind. We, you know, ideas emerge in a way that we don't and will never fully understand. It's a mystery, but we can have new ideas and there's a way to cultivate these powers. So I think that's what we really just have to remember, that that's not going away. The bad guys know that, if you will. You know, we're using shorthand here, so I just say bad guys. Some people don't like that, but I think it's funny. I think what's key is to lean into that deeper truth and that deeper mystery within each of us and get excited about that. Because when people get excited that they can go deeper and there is something more, they're not just flesh and blood, and it's not just like mystery kumbaya stuff. That enthusiasm, you know, that's what that's considered divine for Plato. When you inspire that in people, and it's there like from the start with children, as you have a culture that sort of cultivates that, along with good habits and morals and all these things, so that everything is cultivated to its potential. There's no reason to despair. Like, yes, it's hard, but if we think of what, you know, Socrates went through, Jesus, and, you know, all the early people fighting this cult that is now occupies Hollywood, churches, and all things. It's, you know, it's made a pretty remarkable comeback. But that's why we need to know our history, and we need to remember that these things have been defeated before. And when we study that, again, we're in very interesting times.
Because I read something, the article that you were writing about Babylonian cults and the Roman Emperor cults. So, like, it's something that's been going on for since we know.
Yeah, so people can make a choice, right? Like, thing is, oftentimes we don't know what choices we're making. You know, people think they're making one choice, but they're really making a completely different choice. And so a lot of just awareness or psychotherapy, whatever, is oftentimes people discovering that the choice is different than what they thought it was, or where they thought they didn't have a choice. Either they are making a choice, or there's a choice to be made that they don't realize, you know, is there. So we just need to, when we know the history, like, I'm not, you know, none of these things are really my ideas. I'm just sort of, you know, I'm giving it my own, you know, it's my personal touch. It's me writing the article, so it should have a touch of me. But it's really a question of knowing where our ideas come from. And the battle is more between the people who know where their ideas come from, but the a lot of people who don't really know where the ideas come from. They have beliefs and they have things, but it's largely automatic, right? They're largely in a trance. They're just sort of operating based on automatic motivations. You got to go to work. You got to do this. You got to do that. Love your family. All these things, and that are good and necessary. But I think about it like a, you know, a car that's on manual, and like, depending on where you're at, what terrain you're on, you have to be able to shift gears. Sometimes you have to kind of come online. Awareness has to come to the front, and we have to check in, right? We're supposed to check in with ourselves. We're supposed to practice awareness, which is a spiritual journey, right? And it's a necessary journey. Otherwise, things could go well for a very long time, but then, hey, you're a good law-abiding citizen, and, you know, you do your duties and you take a vaccine because you were told to, because it's supposedly good for you. And now, like, you or your kids are dead. So we do need to practice awareness so that we're not just, we can't always be on automatic. And so I think that's where, with this history, we're just giving people a choice. We're not telling people what to think. Like, when I write my articles, I don't see it as telling people what to think. I'm saying, hey, here's the story. We want to flesh out the whole story and let people choose. Let them, now that they know where their ideas are coming from, or the ideas in our society, let people make a choice. The bad guys don't really want people to make a choice. They're going to frame things with false choices. Right? You're either left or you're right. Are you for this or are you for that? Are you vaxxed or are you unvaxxed? They're going to put people in binds, and they're going to make it look like you have a choice, right? They're magicians. It's like, here are your choices. But no. So I'm saying, yes, I am for choice. Let people make a choice. Let them make a conscious decision. Let us know where ideas come from and proceed from there.
What I'm seeing, I mean, even on Joe Rogan, obviously, he's the most popular podcaster you know, at the moment and for a good few years. And like, he's even bringing people on that were on calls talking about things like that. And it's something that I've kind of looked into a lot. And I remember reading a book. I mean, Scientology, Ron Hubbard said he was going to create it. And if we're bringing Hollywood back into it, like you've got one of the major actors, Tom Cruise, is a member of this. And I mean, I've heard like of some terrible things that cult does. But one thing that shocked me is there was an organization helping people that were in cults and went bankrupt. And Scientology bought it, which means they got the database of all these people. Because what I have noticed myself, because I've seen people in a Christian organization, it was hurting people. And they have recruitment processes for bringing in these people when they see that there's something wrong, whether it's a marriage breakup or something, or they were abused. They know how to recruit them. And that's what they do. And then unfortunately, you've got people, their kids just are automatically brought into this. They don't even know reality. And like, you know, you're coming from hope, which I agree, which I'm the exact same. And when I see people like Joe Rogan and others actually talking about this, exposing it, and even kind of mentioning like the tax advantages, why some of them set them up, they're still abusing kids and everything like that, but it's all about the money. I mean, show me a religion that doesn't talk about money and you won't find money. Like, you know, it's all about the ching ching.
Yeah, well, I mean, again, nothing new there. So people just need to make a choice. But as well, I think the way I see it, and that's why I focus a lot on like arts and letters, culture, poetry. We can only learn so much about health from studying sickness. You know, Grace is a nurse. I'm sure she knows all about that. We can only do so much to combat ugliness, you know, if we're not actually dedicating ourselves to beauty. Beauty is not just the negation of ugliness. Truth is not just the negation of lies, right? They are their own journey and things that we have to sort of fully, you know, that need to be incarnated. So I think part of getting people, like oftentimes people join cults because they're hurting. Like you said, there's abuse. There's all sorts of terrible stories, right? Like, the idea is we don't live in a perfect world, but there's a reason that it is the way it is. And that's it's worth contemplating. You know, the book of Job is one of like the, you know, famous ideas of, hey, like the world is full of chaos and tragedy. Why would it be this way? And there are good reasons that it is. But all that to say, so we need to get people excited about the real thing. That's the way I see it. And oftentimes the reason people are locked in their pessimistic or ugly ideas is because they don't really know that there's something better, right? It's maybe people told them, hey, you don't have to do drugs. You don't have to live as a drug addict. You don't have to do this. You don't have to do that. That doesn't mean much, right? If you've come from, you know, traumatic or like dark places, because you don't really have trust. Your whole upbringing didn't really give you a reason to trust people. So why are you going to trust somebody who's saying, actually, there's something else, or there's a better way? That's a hard sell, and it's understandable. But all the more, that's why I think it's important that we have a conversation about, like, how do we get to the real thing? You know, how does Dante go from the inferno to paradise? You know, there's a lot of things he has to do. There are a lot of rings of fire that he has to jump through, you know, a lot of illusions that he has to shed and confront in people that, you know, in others, in himself, other people and their illusions remind him of his own. And it's a whole journey. But of course, as he ascends, right, as he gets out of the inferno, and he's not alone, right, he's got the ancient poet Virgil. So he has guides. Right, there are guides that we can look to wherever we are or whoever we are that can remind us of there being a deeper thing. And, you know, how do we get in touch with that? And sort of realizing it's unique in each person. So it's going to be different. It's never going to be exactly the same. There's no like mathematical formula. But if we remind people of that, then a lot of the other stuff, you know, it can start to lose its magic. And especially, or I'd say that's actually the goal, right? And that was the goal of my piece we're talking about, predictive programming, demystifying these things. Demystify the mystery cults, demystify the mystery religions, and, you know, demystify what are these things. You know, what did Charles Manson study? Dianetics. He was a Scientologist as well. You know, he did like 150 hours of auditing in prison. He was taught hypnotic techniques, and, you know, he was a psychopath and stuff. And
but like, I read a book on that, I forget the name about it, but it was basically saying like the CIA or the FBI were releasing him, and they, like, I don't know, was it, it sounded like MK Ultra with him.
Yeah, that chaos.
Chaos, exactly. Tom O'Neill.
Yeah. Yeah. So demystify these things for people, and then they lose their magic. Just like an addiction, just like power, you know, when we understand where these things are coming from, it becomes easier to, you know, break the spell. But then we need to be able to offer something, right? Like, what's the point of just telling people, hey, your whole life is a lie, and then like, ciao, bye, and I'm, you know, I'm going to go get some McDonald's now or something. That's not, right? So that's the problem. A lot of people know there's disinformation, but do we have an alternative? You know, people are not just in a cult because, you know, they just fell into it by accident. There's a lot of nuance, and we have to, you know, we have to be appreciate that and not, you know, and remain aware.
And, you know, like you're talking about the poetry as well, because a lot of it comes down to the arts and different things, which they took out of the education system. And if I look at my own kind of schooling, I remember when I was like 8 or whatever, we were learning nice poetry, and then they were making us kind of write our own poems and everything. It was lovely. Then come into secondary school, which is like kind of 13, 12, 13 up to 17. And it was like a Christian brother, we used to call him Batman. You know, I used heavy breathing, and he used to make us learn 2 poems every night, and then you had to write it out, and basically made it, everybody hate poetry. And that seems to be an international thing that they kind of, and like from what you're saying at the start, like people can remember stories if the poetry is good enough and it has a positive meaning and everything. And it's like everything they know that's good for us and that will help, they make sure that they damage it and take it out. And we just have to be conscious of that.
Yeah. And even again, I have no doubt, you know, we're all conspiracy minded, right? Like something is awry. There's these great things. Like, how is it possible that they could be so degraded over time? And, you know, there's also, you know, there's a lot of bad wars and destruction and pessimism. So I think there's a bit of both, in the sense that, like, there is a lost art of poetic recitation, for example. And so, yeah, these, like, if you just have people who are kind of, you know, neurotic and kind of rigid, like, you got to be able to loosen up, right? If you're going to really enjoy poetry and read it aloud, we need like a storytelling culture. And so a lot of that was lost. And yeah, if you're writing it out like that, it's no different than detention, where you have to write out like, I will not break the windows and the whatever. It becomes punishment. So you're right. And there's no reason for that. Again, so I think the other exciting idea is that people are realizing the standard like education system, you don't need to fully rely on that anymore. And it can also be, you know, you can introduce parents, you know, you need communities. Communities are the way that you kind of reform these things. And so communities need to come together, but they need to be inspired by these better traditions, right? Like, what is, yeah, we want kids to know how to recite, how to read. You know, that's why you have storytelling competitions, you have poetry recitation competitions. My friend, Dana Joya, who's the former Poet Laureate of California, he ran the National Endowments for the Arts in the U.S. From like 2000 something to, and he was the one who launched the Poetry Out Loud competition. So like all those high school students that you see reciting poetry, we've probably all seen some clip of that at some point. He had launched that as a literacy program. So it's funny that whenever we get to like, how do we intervene and reform a lot of these things? It does come back to like, hey, how do we get the poetry and the reading and the writing and the creativity back? And Poetry Out Loud is definitely it's a good example. So we need modern initiatives like that and communities. You know, these things don't go away. It's like the solutions are kind of simple. Communities have to come together and rediscover what has always worked and, you know, call things by their name, you know, put a name on these problems that are there. And then, yeah, we start to demystify, the magic of the illusions fades, and the mystery of the truth and the excitement and joy of getting back in touch with that, you know, it takes us over. It's contagious.
Just finally, before I pass you over to Hartman, because, you know, you obviously do a load of research and everything. And, you know, what I've kind of noticed is when you're kind of advised, get this book, it's actually very good. And it's impossible to get because they take it away because they don't want you reading the information. And it's very hard to kind of know the truth. And that's lots of people are trying to find the truth and share the truth and make the world a better place. But there's so many plants, they remove things. The history books have been doctored. What way would you kind of advise people to do the research based on, because I mean, you've done a load of stuff.
Well, the tradition is like original sources. And you're right that, you know, like if you read Plato, the translations by like the famous ones, or Benjamin Jowett, and like half the time these people, they're high level, sort of like they're like the priesthood, right? They're the Delphic sort of, they're translating things. And sure, most of it is kind of accurate. But when you're dealing with something like Plato, poetry or dialogues and these kind of philosophical discourses, it's about nuance, right? You kind of change one word or you mistranslate one word here or there, and you give it a totally different nuance or spin, that can have a profound effect on the overall understanding of somebody who's, especially if they're approaching this stuff for the first time, like or if it's boring. Like Plato's prose are actually they're very lively, they're very funny, and they're supposed to be performed. They're dramas, technically. So if you want a conspiracy, I mean, I don't understand how the dialogues are not dramatized on a yearly basis as like a tradition across the Western world. They're meant to be performed. So, you know, Homer would have the rhapsodies, right? The bards, people would dedicate like their entire lives to learning portions of the Iliads, right? And they would perform it. They were very good. Like this is a very serious operation for education. And so these are examples of things that, going back to the original works, to answer your question, being mindful that the translations can be a bit skewed, but all the more, I mean, if we're talking like really, the young kids, get them learning ancient Greek again, get them learning Latin. You know, like that's what a classical education is. So long story short, I would say the answer is a classical education, which involves the original works, and learning languages. The Humboldt classical education system in Weimar, Germany, that was created by Alexander Humboldt, who was a collaborator of Friedrich Schiller, the poet that I very much like, write about, translate. He created that the classical education system of Germany, which really, you know, what you see with Beethoven, Mozart, Schubert, if you think of all the composers, Schumann, and all the creativity and industry that emerged from a place like Germany, historically, they had a very strong education system, and it was steeped in classics, which when taught well, as opposed to just like you said, making people recite and write their lines. It has a huge, it's hard to measure the impact that it has on the mind. So I'd say classical education in short, like, and get to original sources. I try and elucidate my friend, Matt Arrett, and all our collaborators. We focus a lot on like things like Plato. So we try to elucidate these things that are obscured by the bad guys historically. I'm reading this, which is, this is very popular, and this is a new perversion of Plato. It's by Bronze Age Mindset guy. I don't know if you guys are familiar, but it's very popular among young people. So there are new, ages. They're basically, they're saying that like the we have to go back to the Bronze Age, like the heroes, the mythic, fighting, courageous, glory, you know, people fighting for immortality, and that the West is just kind of like this effeminate thing because of philosophy, because of a misinterpretation of Plato. All that to say, they are always perverting. So we do need to be aware, but there are people who are serious about that. And yeah, just seek and we, you will find.
No, excellent. You mentioned Germany, so I'll pass you over to my German friend, Hartmut.
Thank you. Thank you, Roy. Hello, David. My pleasure talking to you. It's very interesting that you mentioned Schumann, Goethe, Schiller, etc., and the German school system. In Germany, we have 300 to 500,000 words. Goethe knew 83 to 90,000 words. And the newspapers today, like Bild, which is comparable maybe with the Sun, uses 400 words daily. That's it. Yeah. So this is the situation what we are facing. And when we talk about these things, about the programming in Hollywood and about the movies and the cult system, it is, in my opinion, I think about Jesus Christ in two ways. First of all, the interesting thing about Jesus Christ was that he has never lied. So he has never betrayed himself and he has never betrayed his father. And on the other hand, there is Bob Lazar, the guy who was in the Area 51. And he made a very interesting video about religion. He said there is a, a 3 to 5 3 centimeter thick file about religion, which is classified. And he said that the, let's say that some beings see us as containers. And it is our target to choose what is the content of the container. And if we talk about the cult system, and the cult system, it doesn't matter how high the hierarchy goes, it's all about betrayal. Black is white and white is black. Yeah. And black is black and white is white. This is the truth. But in the case of betrayal, there comes a time when let's say the cult forced someone to betray, to say that black is white. And so the cult is characterized by the position of a victim. And we can see this kind of programming everywhere, everywhere, especially in movies. And for example, Rupert Sheldrake said that we have the morphogenetic fields, so that the human beings produce the whole time, let's say, emotions. What we have seen and what we have understand or listened, we cannot forget. It is in our DNA. And we are creative beings. So if the whole time, if we get negative things, if we see, for example, video movies or TV shows like The Brother, Brother is Watching You. Yeah, it starts in the 90s. Now we have all everywhere cameras. Then, for example, we have a lot of TV series about police, about murder, and now we see how the police states are created in the world. So the movie industry, they use our senses in order to program, especially also in the music industry. The biggest concert of the famous Hollywood stars or Hollywood musician industry, they are creating and visualizing their way of future, what we shall believe. What is your opinion about that?
Well, again, yeah, I mean, that's the case. It's, again, nothing new under the sun, right? I have Dianetics here. So L. Ron Hubbard's, or is it Ron L. Hubbard? L. Ron Hubbard's, you know, what he turns into an alien cult. I mean, again, people are talking a lot about aliens as if like there's some new thing, number one. But it's like, no, alien cults are not new, number one. Scientology was an alien cult. Falun Gong is an alien cult for like, it's like the Asian side of the same coin as the Western Scientology. And now this stuff is talked about, like whether it's Joe Rogan or, you know, Lex Fridman, Jordan Peele, like it's everywhere. So there, I think a good way to disabuse people from, there are 1,000 imitations. There are 1,000 different illusions. And, you know, the bad guys, as I like to call them, they know, or a more precise, I call it the Atlantis's Borg cube. So the Borg is like, it's from Star Trek. I don't even like Star Trek, but the Borgs, they imitate. They sort of assimilate everybody and make them into their image. And that's how they take over. They sort of, everyone kind of becomes like them. The Thing, if people have seen that movie, the guy who created that, John Campbell, was the Thing is imitating. It can imitate life forms. And so nobody knows who the Thing is, and it's kind of killing everybody, and everybody's paranoid. And so people are kind of killing each other out of paranoia. So that was written by the editor of Fantastic Science Fiction, Astounding Science Fiction, the science fiction magazine that L. Ron Hubbard, Robert Heinlein, whose Stranger in a Strange Land is the book that Manson based his cult on, and Frank Herbert of Dune, they were all writing for the same thing. So like, if you want to bring it back, science fiction and its predictive programming, it's a very small world. It's a couple of people, and they have very great imaginations, and they're putting out very titillating imitations, if you will, right? Like, they're telling a story, which is about one thing, supposedly, but the art of fiction is that you can be talking about one thing when you're really talking about another. And so you're able to put ideas that go past the conscious into the unconscious. So all that to say, this isn't new. We have to be aware, once we understand the structure of the magic of the magicians, this is another book that I always, Structure of Magic, which is on neuro-linguistic programming by John Grinder and Richard Bandler, who's considered like the world's leading hypnotist. This, it's all there. Like, if you want to know how hypnosis works, how the images are created, how a behavioral scientist and the modern magicians of Hollywood, like how you think about crafting an image, just like poets in the ancient days did, and why Plato took so much time to be like, let's look at how these images are created, like how they're composed, and what ideas underlie them. Because they can be nice. We can have very nice movies. I heard Barbie's a good movie. I heard Oppenheimer's a good movie. I haven't actually seen them. But they can be well made and still have ugly or bad or nefarious ideas.
Of course.
So we at least want to just, like McDonald's, you know, we're not here to shame people. Like, I'm not, have a cookie, have a Big Mac. I'm okay with that. But don't lie to yourself and say like it's good for you. Like, we're allowed to have a cookie. I'm not against that. But if you're going to argue that, like, you know, one cigarette a day keeps the doctor away, or, you know, one Big Mac a day and, you know, I can't rhyme that, but it's not, you're lying to yourself. So first and foremost, as long as we're not lying to ourselves, that's already like, we're already half the battle. And the magicians, though, are good. The real magicians, they're good at creating imitations, at making things look good, at making us feel good, you know, and capturing the imagination, and getting us to break away from maybe more familiar things, using mystery, right? Like, you know, we can all be enticed by mystery. We're all curious. I'm a curious guy. So, you know, that's why I want to be aware, though, like when you're dealing with the cults and the psychological warfare, these things are used. So the alien cults are the perfect example. The lost civilizations and like, how did they get this technology? It can't be from this world. It's, you know, like it's impossible that man built the pyramid. You know, people lose their mind. It's like, well, no, maybe there's, you know, maybe there's more to the story. Like maybe our civilization, we do have to rediscover certain principles of architecture, of building. You know, that's a healthier way to think about these things rather than aliens. You know, there's so many movies now where it's like the punchline is aliens go on podcasts, supposedly great intellectual thinkers or aliens. Yeah, U.S. government has all these secret files that they're guarding from you. But now with their benevolence, they're starting to release some of them. Aliens. That's a tip off. Right. And if people can sort of see. Pull the curtain completely on that. In my view, once we've broken one illusion and we have that experience of like, hey, this was an illusion, and like I see behind it, we can build on that, right? That's something to cultivate. And that feeling, maybe we're part of the alien cult, right? This isn't the shame here. Maybe we're whichever one. Once we see it, we know we've had that visceral spiritual experience of truth, that transformative experience, and we want to keep having that, right? Because there's a lot of illusions, and the more excited we become about tearing our illusions away, our own, right? Not just others. So people are like, it's easy to point out other people's illusions, right? The best experience is tearing ourselves away from our own.
Yeah.
And then it's fun. Like, that's how we get closer to God. That's how we get closer to the spiritual, to the divine, to goodness, truth, and beauty, right? Tearing our illusions away.
In my opinion, everyone, or the task of everyone, is to become sensitive for betrayal. Because the point is, the movie industry, the entertainment industry, also the TV shows, they have the tendency to visualize a kind of human being which is not very empathic. For example, if we have argumentation, if a politician, for example, is put in the right corner, then you can see how people, or how some politicians, try to find a consensus by an objective argumentation, and other people only attack on a personal level in order to get control over this one person. And to see that we people are bombarded with information where the people who have empathy and who try to make consensus are the people who lose is also a kind of programming.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's why I agree. And so, yeah, you're right. In that sense, that sense of betrayal. I mean, yeah, there's a lot of lies, but also, I mean, no one really knows their whole story until they sort of revisit it, right? Like, we all think, you know, our life is like this and I'm like this and da da da. But cultivating awareness is a long journey, right? Like most people, I mean, I'd say rather than we can just say, or even really bad people, let's just, you know, or we have to use a word here. I don't know what you want to use, but you know, people who have intentions that are other than what they maybe make out their intentions to be. And they're often, the two are very divergent, we'll put it that way. There's often an acute lack of awareness. So awareness is not, and even in regular people, right? Like everyday, you know, well-meaning people, there's often an acute lack of awareness on issues that, like, you should know, right? These are not things that should be mysterious, but because of the way our system is, yeah. So in a sense, we're all betrayed, or like we have illusions that sort of betray the truth, I would say. And to the degree that we are in love with these things, yeah, we're betraying ourselves. Just like when we lie to ourselves, you know, we're betraying ourselves by keeping to these things, right? And it only creates more problems, right? Like maintaining illusions. That's the funny thing about the bad guys, if you will. Like, it takes a lot of work. Think about everything they need to do that the whole mass media, Hollywood, and like everything that they have, and still they're still panicking about, like, oh God, like TikTok, like the Zoomers, they're seeing like all the Palestinian kids get murdered, and now they want to ban TikTok, because in that short period of time, basically a whole generation was kind of repatterned, but in a sense that they saw a reality that was supposed to be hidden from them, right? You're not supposed to see all the crimes that your government is sort of doing to maintain the kind of imperial system that it does. There's supposed to be an illusion of democracy and like we're a force for good. If people don't believe in that illusion, and it's like, hey, maybe we're kind of in a Manson cult. Like Western civilization is Mansonian in a sense. We think we're, for the longest time, people thought like we're the chosen one, Western democracy and da-da-da, we're the best. But there is, it's not that there's not true goodness there, but we were, that was used as an illusion to hide a lot, all the stuff, all the ways that we were betraying the truth, right? And betraying ourselves. So I think the real spiritual journey is getting back to the real thing and cultivating that awareness. And then, you know, nobody comes from, same way we don't come from perfect families, people don't choose their families, right? No matter how bad it is, anybody who wants to sort of heal or spiritually sort of mature has to come face to face with what they used to think or like how things appeared and what they are really. Keeping in mind that there is this deeper thing, and that deeper mystery and goodness and truth, it can't be destroyed. It can't be killed. And the bad guys hate that. So that even with a little bit, when it gets out, right, one conversation on a podcast and you see the whole media machine kick into overdrive and pundits panicking because it's like, hey, people are going off script. And if they just go off script a bit, it can shake the whole foundation. So, you know, the Tower of Babel is... it's on shaky foundations.
Let's say it this way. In my opinion, they are, the bad guys have a huge knowledge about psychological torture warfare. And if I see the civilization or the people right now, also, for example, only if I drive with a train and see all the kids, how they behave right now. I see that it is very difficult, especially under the law, what we have right now, also with all the genders, etc., to find your right identity. And if, or let's say it this way, by giving the illusion of changing the identity as possible, it, in my opinion, it's difficult to get an identity and to feel a deep love for yourself and for someone else. I saw a video from a man, this was very interesting, who was, in his opinion, female, and who was embarrassed that the AI could not draw him as a woman. And in my opinion, so the situation is, in my opinion, today, that the bad guys try to create a society with a narcissistic tendency. And this narcissistic tendency can be seen in all the movies, or in many movies, not in all movies, but in many movies, and also can be listened to in many songs. And for this reason, it has become more difficult for children or for teenagers to find their identity in this world.
Right.
What is your opinion about that?
No doubt. And I would say, number one, for a lot of the identity stuff and gender stuff, I think, like, it's become very politically, the culture wars, it's all weaponized, right, on all sides. You know, it's not just left or right. So it's definitely, you know, there are people that have gone through serious things, and there's a million different ways for one to be confused about one's identity. So yeah, it's definitely, I think people, we have to be careful to not, you know, attack a lot of some of these individuals. Yeah, they're leaning hard, and like you said, into the narcissism. A lot are genuinely confused, and a lot have been through all sorts of things, and they're bombarded with all sorts of things. Families have become very dysfunctional, so you're going to get more. A family is supposed to be a pretty simple system. Like, there are certain important things that, as soon as we don't have it, you know, we can be confused for X, Y, Z. So I sympathize with that. We all empathize with that. And then, yeah, I mean, the dark side, the extreme thing of that is, yeah, the Luciferian self-actualization, worship of self, you know, because I talk about this a lot. People have this, like, plastic devil horn idea of Satanism. And then when they hear certain things, they're like, oh, you have some crazy conspiracy theory. And it's like, no, you have some cartoonish image in your head that you saw on TV. And so you have no idea what, like, the actual things are about, despite the fact that, you know, it's been, Christianity was fighting a lot of, like, really dark, you know, satanic, ritualistic, you know, mystery cult, like, really intense stuff, which I describe some of it in my article, and it also links to other stuff. People don't realize how crazy these mystery cults were and how they functioned. So, because we live in an age of abundance, of luxury, so we've had the luxury to sort of forget a lot of things. And the institutions, all our institutions, have also been corrupted from the inside. So it's hard to know who to believe, you know, because there's corruption and illusions on all sides. But all that to say, so to be clear, you know, like Confucian talked about the rectification of names. We need to call things by their names. So plastic devil horns aside, the real Luciferian stuff, it's the worship of the self. It's the self-actualization stuff. We see it everywhere, right? It's self-centric, you know, it's the century of self. And so, like, Dianetics, it's the modern science of mental health. I don't know if you guys have ever had this book, but this is what it sounds like. And this is from the 1960s. See if it sounds familiar. How can you maintain a positive attitude? What is the source of stress, problems, and negative emotions in your life? What is stopping you from accomplishing what you want? How can you get in control of your life instead of life controlling you? It's the self-help stuff that our whole culture has become, this is saturated with that, right? Would you know that this originated with Dianetics and Scientology and related things? Probably not. There's like a million life coaches on Twitter. Tony Robbins comes from, like, psycho-cybernetics is considered the self-help Bible. It's like a non-alien cult, useful, practical version of, like, you know, visualizations, you know, getting rid of bad visualizations or bad images in your head, useful stuff, right? If we have obsessive whatever, you do, if you've had a bad life, you do need to develop the ability to imagine a good life for yourself. Because if you can't, you're never going to break the pattern. So that's the basics of that. That becomes like Tony Robbins and all these things, but it's turned into a cult. So like all cults, they use things that are useful. Meditation. If you've had a stressful life or you've had trauma and you're introduced to meditation and like you can control your breathing, and if you can control your breathing, you can control your heart rate. So if you can control your heart rate, you can control your pressure and you can start to relax and calm down, and you become open to thinking about things that before your mind was too busy to think about. Obviously that has a transformative effect. But then what ideas are people going to be introduced? The Luciferian stuff, they make use of all these things, right? Like compassion is often like the thing that's going to be framed up front, you know, like compassion to yourself, you know, self-care. But then I'd say the irony is, yeah, there's an overcorrection. You know, before in the back in the day, in the olden times, or, you know, I'm not going to say back in my day, but the idea, like there was the more conservative kind of, you just follow the rules, like don't sin, don't do this, don't do that. It's very rigid. And there wasn't necessarily that much animating it half the time. So people rebelled, right? The young people, 1960s counterculture, we know the whole story. There's like an overcorrection to the other side with the usual suspects, brainwashing, cult stuff being deployed. So yeah, we got to be aware, but the Luciferian is, if you just think about yourself, if people view the world from what they like and dislike, what makes them feel good, and what makes them feel bad, and they start to assess reality like, well, this makes me feel good, it must be good. Well, I don't like what that person said, it made me feel bad, they're bad. If your basic way of assessing the world is that, you're easily controllable, right? And so if you're self-centered, if it's a self-centric view that's how you approach the question of truth, you know, this is how people get into trouble. And this is how the bad guys sort of, they just want you to think about yourself, because then you're blinded to all these other things that are happening. Simple, you know, Jesus would say it's in giving that we receive. You know, that's the great irony in that all the focus on the self, you know, people aren't having families anymore, at least in the West, or not specific parts, we should say. They're stuck just thinking about themselves, and they're sick because of it, because that's not, human beings are not made to just think about themselves all the time. And like, what am I doing? What am I going to do? When people have children, for most people, you know, like that's the number one thing. Hey, it's not about me anymore. Like you don't have to worry about everything. There's other people that are dependent on you. That's a universal lesson. So we've gone the other way, where now because everybody is self, it's this cult Luciferian stuff has taken over and been popularized. People are very sick because they've forgotten simple truths. Simple truths is what we've forgotten. There's a lot of details, but if we can remember these simple truths, a lot of the details can sort themselves out.
It is also so interesting concerning the illusion of, for example, follow your dream and do what you want to do. It's the same. Yeah, for example, how many people try to be successful with this way? It doesn't work. If someone wants to be successful, he has to find people who are like-minded and who have the same hunger. And then you have a commitment between each other. And this commitment between these people, this will make a success.
Well, that's a good point right there. And I mean, the dream stuff, you're right. Because again, people get, like, what's the story? The person, you know, there's a movie, The Beach, actually, if we're talking about films. So, but with Leonardo DiCaprio, The Beach, it's pretty, it kind of captures in the ethos of the 1960s and liberation culture. There's a guy, Artie Lang, psychiatrist. He wrote about schizophrenia, the divided self, and he talked about the politics of the family. So the idea was, you're going, the family is a control system, love is a weapon, that's what he was saying. And yeah, in unhealthy systems, it does become used that way. You're shamed if you don't do the right thing, if you don't say the right thing. And so the idea was liberation. Break away from your family. You can fully self-actualize, leave all the toxic stuff behind. And like, so people will take psychedelics, right? They'll dissolve their egos and like remove all their limiting beliefs and break away from all the toxic relationships and like finally self-actualize. Or they're going to run away, like in The Beach. They go to an island, you know, it's like an oasis island, and woo, we're all friends. It's kumbaya. It's always the same thing. Bongos, drugs, and sex, right? And they're all finally liberated. And of course, it's a movie. There's murders, bad things happen. XYZ, welcome to Hollywood. But you have a lot of that. People are like, yeah, follow your dreams. They take psychedelics. They all want to be Joe Rogan, you know, and they end up like they have no family. They have no job. Tim Dillon, the comedian I listen to, he makes a lot of jokes about that. Like people who destroy their lives to be comedians, when he's like, they could have had a good life. They could have had a family. They could have had a job. They could have had all these nice things. They could have had a really great life. But people have been sold this self-actualization stuff. And we don't appreciate how much everybody has been brainwashed by it, to the point that we've forgotten simple truths, you know, like to the point that people are not reproducing, right? The species is not, you know, there's an overcorrection here. Yes, follow your dreams to a point, right? And like you said, do you have a community? Like, have you really thought this out? Or have you just, you know, dropped acid, watched a couple, you know, podcasts, and, you know, you've sort of been lulled by this myth, this illusion that is being sold to everybody to break away and like liberate themselves.
Thank you so much, David. It was a real pleasure to have this conversation with you. Thank you so much.
Hey, David, thank you very much. Let's see, I don't know. It was really very good conversation that we had. And I think Roy Hartmut and I are in agreement. That's why we just continue to do what we're doing, because we do want to, you know, participate and make that difference even in the discussion and the culture and, you know, whatnot, for our families at least. And as they said, it's you know, all those words that hypnotism and neurolinguistic programming. As a holistic nurse, I almost fell into those trainings, but there's always something in me that prohibits me from continuing. And yeah, but I don't, you know, for those who are doing it, as long as they are not, it's not, you know, they know that they're not harming anyone else in their client base or in their family, you know, there's always a place for these techniques, right, David?
Yes.
Yes.
Well, that's the thing. Just like I just said before, there's overcorrections. We can overcorrect, undercorrect in many different ways, right? So a lot of these things are like neurolinguistic programming was based on modeling high performance people, you know, so, or people who overcame phobias, like how'd you overcome your phobia? The guy, Richard Bandler, put ads out in the newspaper and he interviewed the people who overcame their phobias, which, you know, if you've been traumatized or you have a thing and it's like you can't take elevators or some of these things, it can make your whole life a mess, right? So what they found out was that, well, the person had imagined themselves going through the thing in their head. And so once they had gone through in their head, when it came to the real thing, they were less, they weren't afraid because they had already rehearsed it. And once you go through it, so you realize that the thought of the real thing is often scarier than actually just doing the thing. The thoughts are often the enemy, right, or the obstacle. And so just there's a million things like that. So we all have, like, you know, whether annoying thoughts or habits or something, there's, you know, there are paths of least resistance. You know, they say shortcuts. They say heuristics in hypnosis, which are shortcuts technically. I don't believe there are shortcuts to life, but there are paths of least resistance. And life is full of challenges and full of opportunities and duties as it is. So we do want to be efficient. We don't want to bang our heads or be in an altered state for 20 years, you know, from substances or something because, you know, bad things happened to us and, you know, we didn't know how to break the patterns. So like NLP, people who have like obsessive patterns, there are ways to break the patterns. And then people can like proceed to their longer, you know, spiritual journey and healing and health. You won't get that all from NLP. Problem with all these cults is like they're sold as a thing, right? Like as it's like it becomes a religion, like psychoanalysis, right? Like whether it's Freud or Jung, like it becomes a total thing that people now adopt. That's overcorrection. But like, yes, use the techniques. Let us practice discernment. Let us remove our all the obstacles in the way and all the illusions. And then we'll find out who we really are, right? We'll find out who other people really are as we all get excited about that.
Oh, that's a perfect ending, I believe, for the meantime. Yeah. So why don't you continue to invite the audience to where they can follow you, get in touch with you, and all the wonderful things that you do.
Right.
Especially the movie that's upcoming.
Yeah. So simply put, if you go to ageofmuses.substack.com, that's my main Substack. And from there, you're going to be able to find like my poetry magazine, The Chained Muse, our publication, New Lyre. We have a journal of arts and letters, classical arts and letters, new poetry, prose, stories twice a year. So people can get the physical copies of our journal. And yeah, so ageofmuses.substack.com. And I have a new deep dive. So part one just came out yesterday. Part two is coming out next week, called Slaying Mithra, Self-Help, Human Potential, and the Luciferian Perversion of the West. So the things we talked about are a bit of a preview of that.
And that's David Goslin of thechainedmuse.com and the Substack, aidsofmuses.substack. And when you follow Matthew also in the Canadian Patriot, you'll see his name there. And just Google him, and for sure you will not be disappointed.
Yeah, okay? Thanks for having me. And it was nice chatting with you guys. It's really fun. Keep it up.
No,
it was a pleasure.
Thank you very much. Our pleasure. And remember, go ahead and if you could be a paid subscriber to his Substack and other things that he does, feel free. Also share, like it, subscribe, and do so for Roy Hartmut and me. And you have a beautiful day, everyone, and don't let anyone or anything take the joy out of your life. Mabalos, that's thank you in my language.
Au revoir. Ciao.
Ciao. Thank you.